it may be a relief to leave the foulness meditation behind and come to the recollection meditations, because the six kinds of recollection meditations mentioned in this chapter are something like devotional meditations. Because they are not like the other kinds of meditation, I mean the kasina meditation or vipassana meditation. Because you do a lot of reflection, or you do a lot of thinking when you practice this kind of meditation. And although there are ten recollections, they are divided into two chapters. So six are treated in this chapter, and the remaining will be treated in the next chapter. So, 10 recollections. Now, the Pali word for recollection is anusati. Now, when you read Visuddhimagga or other translations, sometimes you may find the language queer, explaining and not much adding any new understanding to it, because they are explaining the Pali word. Now here the Pali word is anu and sati. You already know sati. Sati is mindfulness or remembering. And anu is a prefix, and so it has more than one meaning. And here, I think two meanings are given, because it arises again and again. So that is the meaning of anu. Anu can mean again and again. Or alternatively, the mindfulness that is proper. Now, anu can also mean proper. It is a proper mindfulness for a clansman who has gone forth out of faith, since it occurs only in those instances where it should occur. So anusati is defined as mindfulness which arises again and again, or which is a proper mindfulness for those who have gone forth, actually for any person.
So a clansman is a monk or a member of the sangha?
A clansman, in this book, it would mean a monk. But the Pali word, kulapoda, means just anybody, a monk or a layman.
Just a sangha member. Somebody who's a Buddhist?
That's right, yes. So, now the first is the recollection of the Buddha. Actually, recollection of the attributes of the Buddha, or the qualities of the Buddha. Not recollection of the Buddha himself, actually. But it is, the word means, literally means recollection of the Buddha. And this is a term for mindfulness with the enlightened one's special qualities as its object. So when you practice this meditation, you concentrate or you reflect on the attributes or special qualities of the Buddha. So the object of this meditation, this reflection meditation, is the attributes of the Buddha. But the next one is recollection of the Dhamma. Here also recollection of the qualities of the Dhamma. They will be treated in detail a little later. So this is a term for mindfulness with the special qualities of the laws being well proclaimed, etc., as its object. And here, Dhamma is translated as law. And it will be explained in its proper place that Dhamma means the four paths, the four fruitions, Nibbana, and also the teachings or the scriptures. So there are 10 kinds of Dhamma. Four paths, four fruitions, Nibbana, and the teachings. Some attributes have to do with all 10, and some have to do with not all 10, maybe 8 or 4 or whatever. So they'll be explained later. The third is the recollection of the Sangha. And Sangha here means a community of monks who follow Buddha's advice and who have attained to the enlightenment. So this is a term for mindfulness with community special qualities of being entered on the good way and so on. So when you practice this meditation, you concentrate on the qualities of the Sangha. The Sangha is well behaved, something like that. The next is recollection of virtue, recollection of one's moral conduct, one's pure moral conduct. So that's why it is a mindfulness with special qualities of virtues, untornness, etc. Untorn, unbroken, unblotched, something like that. And then next one is recollection of generosity. And it is reflecting on one's own generosity and getting joy or happiness. Now, with generosity, special qualities of free generosity. What is free generosity? Free generosity means giving without any expectations, without expecting anything in return. That is called free generosity in Pali. The Pali word is mukta jaga. And jaga means giving, and mukta means freed, something like that. So that is, if when you give, you just give. You don't expect any results or anything from this act of giving. And
how is that different from just generosity?
I don't know what generosity means in English. Is it giving? But you may expect some results, some good results from this giving. A good name or some something in the future. But here you just give, because it is a good thing to do, and you do not expect anything from this giving. The next one is recollection of deities, and that means recollection of the qualities of the deities. They before they were born as deities, they were human beings, and they have the qualities of morality, qualities of generosity, and so on. And these qualities are in me, and so I am as good as they are, something like that. So comparing or taking deities as witness, one reflects on one's own good qualities, and not to be proud of oneself, but just to rejoice in one's being generous, one's being of pure moral conduct, and so on. And the next one is recollection of death. Is it mindfulness with the termination of the life faculty as its object? It simply means death. Say termination of the life faculty. It's a technically speaking, we use the life faculty. It really means just death. Mindfulness occupied with the body. Now here, the Pali, you have to understand the Pali word. Pali word is kaya gata sati. Actually, they are three words, but three words are joined together, compounded together, so they become one word. Now, among these three words, the word gata means gone, or gata means just to be somewhere. So, in Pali, there is a difference between saying gone to the material body, or it is on the material body. So it is explained in two ways. It is gone to the material body, that is analyzed into head, hairs, etc. Or it is gone into the body. I don't like this. I just want to say it is on the body. That means your mind is on the different parts of the body when you practice this meditation. The Pali word gata, etymologically gata means, say, gone to something. But it has another meaning, that is to be. So the mindfulness gone to the parts of the body, or mindfulness which is on the parts of the body, they mean the same thing.
So that gata is the same as in Tathagata.
Right. Yes.
So it could be well gone or well
here.
Present, well here.
Gone to. Gone to. The word is kaya gata sati. Sati, which is gone to kaya. I mean the body. Or sati, which is on the kaya, on the body.
But in the term Tathagata.
Tathagata means, tatha means thus, in that way. And gata means come, or be.
So it could be thus gone or thus here.
Thus gone, yeah.
But it could also mean thus here or thus.
Thus. Can, yes. And, you know, with these words, the commentators are very fanciful. And they give many meanings to one word. You will find this today. And sometimes people say, the commentator is not sure which is the correct meaning of the word, because he gives 5, 6, 7, 8 meanings to only one word. And this is their, what they call, their ability to divide words into different parts and then explain them. They may not be actually natural, but still they are fond of doing this, especially when it comes to defining or explaining the names of the Buddha. I mean, and words of the words which describe the Buddha. So, kaya gata sati. Now, a little further down. But instead of shortening the vowel, thus in the usual way. Bodhigon mindfulness, kaya gata sati. That means, according to Pali grammar, the vowel in the middle of a compound can be shortened. So if it is shortened, it will be kaya gata sati, and not gata. So the commentator is explaining this. Here, the long vowel is not shortened, so it is kaya gata sati, and not kaya gata sati. And the next one is mindfulness of breathing. So that is play. So, and then the last one is recollection arisen inspired by peace. Is the recollection of peace. It really means a recollection on the attributes of Nibbana. Not taking Nibbana as direct object, but dwelling on its attributes, dwelling on the attributes of Nibbana, qualities of Nibbana. So these are the 6 recollections which will be treated in this chapter. So the first one, now before going to the first one, we have to understand the formula or the words descriptive of the Buddha. Just recently, Michael showed me the Lotus Sutra. Now, actually, Mahayana Sutras are fashions of, on the Pali Sutras. So there are many similarities in describing and in the style of the language, although Mahayana Buddhism used and still uses Sanskrit language, because Sanskrit and Pali are very close to each other. So this set of the names or epithets of the Buddha are found both in Theravada and Mahayana. And it's a very, this set of attributes is very popular with Theravada Buddhists. I hope it is also with Mahayana Buddhists, because on a devotional side, say we want to concentrate on the Buddha and dwell on his attributes. It's like a Christian praying to God or thinking of God, something like that. And this set of attributes is well known to almost every Buddhist. The Pali is Iti Piso Bhagava and so on. So it is given here in the paragraph 2, the second paragraph. That blessed one is such since he is accomplished and so on. But the translation should not run like this. The blessed one is accomplished for such and such a reason. It should go like this. There are 9 or 10 attributes of the Buddha given here. And Buddha is accomplished for such and such a reason. Buddha is fully enlightened for such and such a reason, and so on. And the reasons or the reasons will be explained in detail. And when, although for such and such a reason is not mentioned again and again in the formula, when you practice this meditation, you have to say this. Because sometimes you do not concentrate on all the 10 or 9 attributes. You pick up only one which you like best, and then you concentrate on that one attribute and say it again and again and again in your mind. So, Buddha is accomplished for such and such a reason. Buddha is fully enlightened for such and such a reason. Buddha is endowed with virtue and conduct for such and such a reason, and so on. And such a reason, the reasons will be given in the exposition. So, in the paragraph 3 also, that blessed one is accomplished for such and such a reason. He is fully enlightened for such and such a reason. And then dots. He is blessed for such and such a reason. So it should go like this.
Such? Blessed one is accomplished.
Yeah, the word appears twice. The first occurrence of the blessed one refers to the Buddha, and the second occurrence refers to his attribute, his quality. So the blessed one is blessed because he is so and so, something like that. Now the first one, you have to understand the Pali word. Now Pali word is araha, arahant or araha. Now this word is divided differently and then explained, or the meaning of this word is given in 5 ways. 5 meanings are given to this one word. So the cutting up of the word is, the first one is ara and ha. The full word is araha, but we have to divide it into ara and ha. That is for the first meaning. Now ara means, the first is just araha. So for the first meaning, the word is araha. And we don't have to look for etymology of this word for this meaning. The word, and this word means just far away or remote. So here, according to this meaning, Buddha is called araha because he is far away from mental defilement. So he stands utterly remote and far away from all defilements because he has expunged all trace of defilement. That means expunged all defilements without any trace.
It's called araka here.
Yeah, there.
Is that a mistake?
No, That means the originally it was Araka, but it was changed to Araha. It is a way of explaining. Sometimes people pronounce word as they like, not according to etymology or something. So the pronunciation may change, and so it becomes Araha. Or sometimes the word Araha has the same meaning as the word Araka. Araka means to be far away. It's very confusing. Because it can also mean to be close to, but it is not given here, fortunately. But in the sub-commentary, they are given. So the first one is to be away from, to be remote. That means Buddha is remote from the mental defilements. And here, all trace of mental defilements, all trace is important. That means when Buddha abandoned mental defilements, they abandoned with all trace. So there is not even a trace of mental defilements in the minds of the Buddha. But arahants are different. Arahants also eradicate mental defilements, but they do not, or they cannot eradicate all traces of mental defilements. Although they are not mental defilements, they are something, some results of mental defilement, like a bad habit. You know, there was an arahant who addressed any people, anybody he met as a wicked person or something like that. So he was born as a high caste Brahmin for 500 consecutive lives, and so he was used to that form of address. So whenever he meets a person, he will say, "Hey, wicked person, where are you going?" or something like that. So he was an arahant, and he had no mental defilements, no dosa, no ill will, but still he could not give up this habit. But Buddhas are different. When Buddhas eradicate mental defilements, they eradicate with all traces. So not a little trace remains with the Buddha. So all trace of mental defilement, this is important. And that is what makes Buddhas different from arahants, because they both of them eradicate all mental defilements, but the Buddhas eradicate with all traces, but arahants do not. So they have some kind of this trace of mental defilements remaining with them. Now the second meaning is, according to the second meaning, the division of the word is what? Ari and ha. Hada means destroyed or killed. So ha also means that. So ari, ha. Ari means enemies, and ha means kill. So one who has killed the enemies is called araha. It could be called ariha, but the e is changed to a, and so it becomes araha. That is how the formation of what is explained. And here ari means what? The enemies, again mental defilements. So one who has eradicated mental defilements is called an arahant. Then the third meaning is ara and ha. Ara here means spokes, and ha means to destroy. So one who has destroyed the spokes is called an araha. Now this wheel of the round of rebirths, with its hub made of ignorance and craving for becoming, with its spokes consisting of formations of merit and the rest, with its rim of aging and death, which is joined to the chariot of the triple becoming by piercing it with the axle made of the origin of kankas. Actually here, the origin of kankas really means kankas, which are origins. not necessarily origin of khankas. Khankas themselves are origin. They are origin for some other mental defilements. Has been revolving throughout time that has no beginning. All these wheel spokes were destroyed by him at the place of enlightenment, that is under the Bodhi tree, as he stood firm with the feet of energy on the ground of virtue, wielding with the hand of faith the axe of knowledge that destroys karma. You mean this? Wait a minute. Because the spokes are thus destroyed, he is accomplished also. Now, in order to understand this passage, you have to look at the chart here, because it refers to the dependent origination. So the second. Now it is said here that made of ignorance and of craving, it's a hub. Now, the whole Paticchasamubbada is viewed as a wheel. So in this wheel, the hub is ignorance and craving. Number one, ignorance, and number eight, craving. So they are compared to the hub of the wheel, with its spokes consisting of formations of merit and the rest. That means number two, three, four, five, and so on. They are compared to spokes. If as someone who could draw, I want him to draw a picture of this wheel and the and the carriage. Then, with its rim of aging and death, so the rim is aging and death is compared to the rim because they come last here. Aging and death means number 12. Which is joined to the chariot of the triple becoming means triple existence, the sense sphere existence, form sphere existence, and formless sphere existence. Piercing it with the axle made of the origin of kankas. So the kankas are compared to the axle. So the hub, the spokes, the rim, and the axle. And above the wheels, there is the body of the chariot, or carriage. So when the spokes are destroyed, then the whole thing is destroyed. So Buddha was called Araha, one who destroys the spokes, because he destroyed the spokes of this wheel of existence, the dependent origination. Or alternatively, it is a beginningless round of rebirth that is called the wheel of round of rebirth, and so on. And the explanation here also has to do with the dependent origination. So in the dependent origination, there are 12, we call them links, with 12 factors. So number one is the condition for number two, and number two is condition for number three, and so on. I say condition, not the cause, because sometimes they are cause, sometimes they are not, but they are all conditions. So one is condition for two, two is condition for three, three for four, and so on. So if you have this in mind, then you can understand the following paragraphs. Or if you don't understand, you have to go to Abhidhamma and pray, read about the dependent origination. Now, paragraph 16 explains how clinging is conditioned for, karma, becoming process, and rebirth process. I think that is interesting. I shall enjoy sense desires, and with sense desire clinging as condition, he misconducts himself in body, speech, and mind. Now, clinging is a condition for good or bad karma. Because I want to enjoy sense desires, say, let us say, in a better existence. I want to be reborn in a better existence. I want to be reborn as a celestial being. So I will do something so that I will be reborn there. Sometimes I happen to do what is wrong in body, speech, or mind. Sometimes we meet with, say, bad teachers, and they may tell us that if you sacrifice a human being, then you will be reborn as a deva or something like that. So, because of that clinging, we do good or bad deeds. Here, in the first place, we do misconduct himself in body, speech, and mind. Owing to the fulfillment of his misconduct, he reappears in the state of loss. That means he is reborn in the four woeful states as an animal, or in hell, or as a goat, and so on. The karma that is the cause of his reappearance there is karma process becoming. So that belongs to here, number 10 in the links. The aggregates generated by the karma are rebirth process becoming. That also is number 10. There are two kinds of number 10 factor. The one is action and the other is becoming. So action really means good or bad karma, and becoming means the result of good or bad karma. And actually, becoming in number 10 and number 11 are the same. The generation of the aggregate is birth. That means coming into being of the aggregates at the moment of conception, or at the moment of rebirth, and that is birth. And they are maturing is aging, and their dissolution is death. So there is clinging, and clinging is a condition for action or becoming, and the becoming is condition for birth and decay and death. Then I shall enjoy the delights of heaven. And in the parallel manner, he conducts himself well. Here he did the right thing. And so, owing to the fulfillment of his good conduct, he reappears in a sensual sphere, heaven. And here also, the karma that is the cause of his reappearance, there is karma process becoming, and the rest as before. That means the aggregates generated by the karma rebirth process becoming, and the generation of the aggregates is birth, their maturing is aging, their dissolution is death. You have to understand that way. Sometimes you want to be reborn as a Brahma, a higher celestial being, and then you do something, and owing to the fulfillment of the development, he is reborn in one of these states, and so on. Now, paragraph 20. Understanding of discernment of conditions thus: ignorance is cause, formations are causally arisen, and both these states are causally arisen. Ignorance is the cause, but it is also dependent upon a condition. So ignorance as well as formation is causally arisen. So both are causally arisen. This is a knowledge of the causal relationship of states. Understanding of discernment of conditions thus: in the past, so in the future, also ignorance is a cause, and so on. Herein, ignorance and formations are one summarization. In Burmese, we translate it as a layer, say two layers, three layers, and so on. The Pali word is sankhepa. Sankhepa really means short or summarization. But in Burmese, we translate it as a layer. So there are four layers. Ignorance and formations are one summarization. So in this chart, number one and number two, consciousness, mentality, materiality, the sixfold base, contact and feeling are another. That means 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They are one layer, or one summarization. Craving, clinging, and becoming are another. 8, 9, 10. And birth and aging and death are another. That is 11 and 12. So there are four summarizations or four layers. The first summarization is past. So 1 and 2 belong to past time. The two middle ones are present. That means 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then 8, 9. These two are present. And birth and aging of death are future. So that is why we say the dependent origination covers three lives, past, present, and future lives. When ignorance and formations are mentioned, then also craving, clinging, and becoming are included too. So those five states are the round of karma in the past. Now, in the past, there are only two factors, two links, that is 1 and 2. But when you say, when you mention 1, you virtually mention, you look at this chart. When you mention 1, you virtually mention 8 and 9 also, because they belong to the same passion, kilesa, round of kilesa. So, in reality, we say, when we say 1 and 2, we mean 1, 2, 1, when we say 1, we mean 1, 8, 9. And when we say 2, we mean 2, 10. So when we say 1 and 2, we mean 1, 2, 8, 9, 10. That is why there are 5 in the first layer, in the first summarization. Actually, there are 5, although 2 are mentioned. And the second, it's okay. And the third, when we say craving 8 and 9, then we also mean number 1. This is vice versa. And when we say 10, we also mean 2. So when we say 8, 9, 10, we virtually mean 1, 2, 8, 9, 10. So this way we get 20 conditions. And because the five beginning with consciousness are described under the heading of birth and aging and death, these five states are the round of karma, result, and the future. They make 20 aspects in this way. They are called 20 aspects. And here there is one link between formations and consciousness. So there are three links altogether. First link is between 2 and 3. Second link is between 7 and 8. And third link is between 10 and 11. So the Buddha knows all these. So he is called Araha. And then in paragraph 22, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th line, I'll read from the 4th. Knowledge is in the sense of that being known. Actually, it should be in the sense of that which knows, not being known. It looks like being known in Pali, but the sub-commentary explains is to mean that which knows, not that which is known. So being known should be changed to which knows, and understanding is in the sense of the act of understanding, and so on. So in order to fully understand it, you should have a knowledge of the dependent origination. And the next one is Araha. Araha means worthy. So Buddha is worthy of accepting offerings, and so he is called an Araha. The requisites of robes, etc., and of the distinction of being accorded homage. Actually, it means just special honor. So Buddha is worthy of the requisites of robes and so on, and also he is worthy to accept special honor offered to him by other beings. And then this paragraph explains that he was honored when he was alive, and even when he was dead, people continued to honor him by spending a lot of money and building monasteries and so on. So here in later in the paragraph, and after the Blessed One had finally attained Nibbana, King Asoka renounced wealth to the amount of 96 million for his sake and founded 84,000 monasteries. That means the renouncing of 96 million and founding of 84,000 monasteries are the same. That means he spent this much money to build 84,000 monasteries in India. And that's just to dedicate to the memory of the Buddha. And in paragraph 24, what is meant by vaunt their cleverness? Do you see the words? Mm-hmm. In the world, who vaunt their cleverness? What's that?
Show off.
Show off. Wow.
The Pali word means who think that they are wise, although they are not really. Do these words convey the same meaning?
Similar.
Similar. Mm-hmm. So people who thought they are clever, yet they do evil in secret. But Buddha is not like that. So Buddha has no secret. Therefore Buddha is called here A plus Raha. The division of word is A plus Raha. A means no, and Raha means secret. So Buddha has no secret. Buddha did not do anything secret, any wrongdoing secretly. So he is called Araha. So the word Araha can be divided as Araha or Ariha or Araha. So this is play of words. Okay, we'll go to the second one. He is fully enlightened, Samma Sambuddha.
We kind of skipped over about Buddha and Karma.
Yeah, yes. Now I remember. Now that means destroy the knowledge that destroys karma really means the knowledge of the fourth enlightenment, the fourth stage of enlightenment, knowledge which arises at the fourth stage of enlightenment. So when a person reaches the fourth stage of enlightenment, or in other words, when a person becomes an arahant, he no longer accumulates any karma, good or bad karma. So that is why he is called extinguisher of karma. You know, when a person becomes an arahant, even though he may do good things, he do not acquire karma because his consciousness is not kusala at that time. His consciousness is functional consciousness, kriya. So that is what is meant here.
Where are we now?
That is on page 207. Wielding with the hand of faith the axe of knowledge that destroys karma. So that destroys karma, the knowledge that destroys karma. That means when you get this knowledge, that means when you become an arahant, you no longer acquire any karma. You may do meritorious deeds, you may still do meritorious deeds, but they are not called kusala. They become kriya, functional. So Buddhas and Arahants are said to have no kusala or akusala. They are those who relinquish both kusala and akusala, both wholesome and unwholesome acts. So Arahant may not do any unwholesome act. But he may do, which is wholesome to us, wholesome acts, but his acts are not said to be of wholesome type, but his acts are of a functional type, because they do not produce any result. That is why here it said the knowledge that destroys karma. It really means the fourth stage of enlightenment, or in other words, the fourth magga. The fourth magga, I mean, knowledge which accompanies the fourth magga consciousness, or which arises with the fourth magga consciousness.
I guess the reason I brought it up, I understand what this is saying, I guess the reason I brought it up is that there have been teachers in America who say that, or act in ways that they don't create karma, but they're assuming that there are karma.
No, if they are, they really don't create fresh karma.
Right, I understand.
Yeah. But, you know, they do not acquire fresh kusala karma or akusala karma, because their actions are all fruitless, not producing any fruits, any results. But not that.